Okay, I'll read the verses and then we'll look at it. Mark chapter 10, 1 through 12. And he, that's Jesus, arose from thence and cometh unto the coasts of Judea by the farther side of the Jordan. And the people resort unto him again, and as he was wont, that was his typical practice, he taught them again. And the Pharisees came to him and asked him, is it lawful for a man to put away or to divorce his wife, putting him to the test? And he answered and said unto them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses suffered or permitted to write a bill of divorcement and to put her away or divorce her. And Jesus answered and said unto them, for the hardness of your heart he wrote you this precept. But from the beginning of the creation God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall become one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. But therefore God is joined together, let no man put asunder. And in the house his disciples later asked him again of the same matter. And he said unto them, whosoever shall put away or divorce his wife and marry another commits adultery against her. And if a woman shall put away or divorce her husband and be married to another, she commits adultery. Okay. When Jesus returned to the region of Judea and the eastern side of the Jordan River, great crowds of people followed him, so he began to teach them as was his custom in encountering these throngs. Well, in that kind of a setting, with Jesus heavily surrounded by crowds, the Pharisees came to him to put him to the test, asking Jesus, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? Now, their intent was very clear. The Jews were very divided over the grounds of divorce. The followers of Rabbi Shammai held that a man could not divorce his wife unless he found her guilty of sexual immorality, while the followers of Rabbi Hillel were more lax, allowing for divorce for many, including trivial reasons. For example, if a woman burned the roast, he could divorce the woman, or if she wasn't cleaning the house the way he thought she should and so forth, he could divorce her. Well, the Pharisees here then tried to get Jesus to commit himself to either Shammai's view or Hillel's view, thus causing a division in his followers, with a large segment of them ceasing to follow him due to the stand that he'd taken. So they weren't really interested in what stand he took, just take a stand so that we can divide the followers. It's kind of like divide and conquer. Well, you'll notice not long ago we were looking at this issue of divorce and remarriage in our adult Sunday school class, but if you go back to Matthew chapter 19, you have a slightly different version. In Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 12 of this same incident. There we read that the Pharisees also came unto him, tempting him and saying unto him, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife for every cause? And he answered and said unto them, have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall become one flesh? Wherefore they are no more twain, but one flesh. But therefore God is joined together, let not man put asunder. They say unto him, why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and to put her away? He said unto them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, permitted you or suffered you to put away your wives. But from the beginning it was not so. And I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, that's the clause that does not appear in Mark's gospel, and shall marry another commits adultery. And whoso marries her which is put away commits adultery. And so forth. Well, though the Matthew 19, 30 through 12 account of this event shows Jesus prohibiting divorce with the famous except it be for fornication clause of Matthew 19, 9, Mark's account here totally omits that clause. You notice when we were reading through Mark 10, it doesn't appear. Absolutely doesn't. And that reveals that since Mark's gospel was for Gentile readers, Dr. Irie points this out in his introduction, the exception clause applied only to Jews of the day who were under the law. And we've noted this before in our study of Matthew. There were three things that the Jews called fornication that the Gentiles didn't. One was if you became immoral or committed fornication while you were engaged to somebody else. That required a bill of divorcement, because in those days when you got engaged, that was actually a marital contract, even before the couple had come together physically and so forth. So they had to break that with a bill of divorce. Well, that doesn't apply to Gentiles today, because when you get engaged today, it's not a legal arrangement. So you can break an engagement. There's absolutely nothing about divorce or marriage. The second case is if a Jew married a Gentile. In that case, that violated the law, so they had to put away their wife. That happened in the book of Ezra. I think Ezra chapter 9 or 10 or somewhere in there. And then there was another case, and that is if you married someone in violation of the Levitical degrees. In other words, you married your cousin or something like that. Well, that was called fornication. You had to put away the cousin because that was in violation of the law. That doesn't apply to us today because, first of all, no state in the United States allows you to marry your first cousin. Some states will allow you to marry your second cousin, but not your first. But other states won't. So some states won't allow you even to marry your second cousin and so forth. So that really doesn't apply to us either. So none of those situations apply to us. We're not under the law, so Jews and Gentile marriage isn't something that's applicable to us. Our engagement customs are different, so that doesn't apply. And we don't have the situation of Levitical degrees because the government won't let you, marry someone who's that close to you anyway. That's why you have to get a marriage license. They test and see what in the world's going on. So it doesn't apply to us. So for believers in the church, Mark 10, 1 to 12 appropriately shows Jesus Christ calling for unconditional permanency in marriage. Jesus asked the question in Pharisees what Moses had commanded them, and they replied that Moses had permitted them to divorce their wives. Well, Jesus answered that Moses had permitted Israel to divorce only because of the hardness of the hearts of the people, but that divorce was never the intent of God. And of course, he alludes to Genesis 1:27, where it says, "In the beginning God created them, male and female created he them." And then in Genesis 2:24, where he says, "For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall become one flesh." And Jesus reminded the Pharisees that God at creation had made human beings as male and female so that a man would leave his father and his mother and cleave to his wife, and they too would become one flesh. It's interesting, Jesus does not define marriage here as a man leaving his father and his mother and be joined to another man, or a woman being joined to another woman. Man leaves his father and mother, it's a heterosexual family that it comes from. He cleaves to his wife. That's another heterosexual arrangement. So heterosexuality is the arrangement that God had planned from the beginning. And if the man leaves his father and mother, he's leaving his father and mother who stayed together in marriage for a long, long time so he can grow up to become a man who's of marriageable age. So it implies the permanency of marriage. So a man leaves his father and his mother, he cleaves to his wife, and they two become one flesh. Now, since the two become one flesh in God's eyes when they marry and come together, having been made one flesh by God's joining them together, no man is to put them asunder in divorce. So when the disciples and Jesus were later in a private setting in the house, they asked him for clarification of the matter. For Jesus had taken a stand that was stricter not only than the liberal view of divorce taught by Rabbi Hillel, but it was stricter even than the more conservative view of Rabbi Shammai, who allowed you to get divorced just because if your wife committed immorality. Accordingly, Jesus told them that marriage, being an unconditionally permanent institution in God's eyes, was not to be followed by divorce and remarriage, for these acts were adulterous to God. So Jesus said that whoever divorces his wife, even if she's committed immorality, whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery against her, meaning he abuses the right of his wife to have him as her husband, with whom she was made one flesh. And then in Mark 10:12, in addition, if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she also commits adultery, for she abuses the right of her initial husband to have her with whom he was made one flesh. So whether it's the man who's initiating the divorce or whether it's the woman who's initiating the divorce and then getting remarried, either way, it's adultery. You can't weasel out of it just because you're a woman, or you can't weasel out of it just because you're a man. Jesus went after the man, he went after the woman. So Jesus called for the unconditional permanency of marriage, outlawing divorce and remarriage under all circumstances. For marriage is the forming of one flesh in God's eyes, a bond that is to be honored for life. Romans 7, 1-3 talks about how a woman is bound to her husband as long as her husband lives, but once her husband dies, okay, that's a different story. Then she's free to remarry. Let me just get that passage here. Romans chapter 7. Know ye not then, verse 1, know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law, how that the law has dominion over a man as long as he lives. For the woman which has an husband is bound by law to her husband so long as he lives. But if the husband be dead, she's loosed from the law of her husband. See? So, that's the law. So may we unconditionally stay faithful to our spouse until death parts us. If we are virgins, may we carefully consider God's will in selecting our life's partner, since God will require that we stay wed to that person for life. And if we have been divorced or divorced and remarried, may we stay in our latest state or be reconciled to our first spouse if that is biblically permissible. I put down both 1 Corinthians 7, 10 to 11 with Deuteronomy 24, 1 to 4. 1 Corinthians 7, 10 to 11 says that if a couple divorces, let them either remain unmarried or be reconciled. Now, Deuteronomy 24 puts a limit on the reconciliation. That reconciliation is not possible if one of the partners then goes and marries someone else. And even if that partner divorces that someone else, they can't come back because there's another marriage. They can be reconciled only if they've just been divorced and they've remained single. Then they can get remarried. Many years ago here, it's probably been close to 30 years ago now, I performed a reconciliation marriage of a couple. They'd gotten divorced. They wanted to get remarried because they thought that was right in the Lord, or they were close to divorce or something. I forget what it was. And I performed. I was very willing to perform it. There had been no problem. There had been no other partner that had come in between them and so forth. And I was able to perform that. But you know, it's interesting. Increasingly, I'm getting reports from people who view Nepog Church as an anchor of stability in their unsettled lives, lives that are unsettled mainly because of divorce. We had input this morning. I don't know if you noticed it when we had the prayer request time from two different parties and how they view Nepog as a real, Nepog Church as an anchor for them. There's a reason for that. There's a tremendous amount of instability in both parties. It came from people who've been through divorce and remarriage and have felt the effects of it. Their children have felt the effects of it. And increasingly, with the weakness in the family structure, churches that are gospel preaching and Bible teaching are going to become real anchors more and more. We're going to be seeing that more and more because there's a tremendous need. But I keep trying to encourage people. We really need to watch. There is no grounds whatsoever for divorce. It never has been, never will be. It's one flesh. So God wants us to remain loyal and faithful till death do us part. As a minister, I always put that line in there when I'm, you know, giving the vows to the couple, till death do you part, because I mean it. And that's what they're supposed to do, is stay married until death do you part. This is why when young couples come to me for marital counseling and everything, I almost get them a little scared. I said, look, this is for life. And you're going to look at her, and someday she's going to look different than she is now, you know, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, and him too. Are you willing to stay married for life? Because if you're not, you better not get into marriage right now. So it's very important that we look upon this. It's important for our church. It's important for society. It's important for our children that marriages remain stable.